Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. Your panel this morning is, to my right, Justice Sue Walker. To my left, Justice Bob McCoy. I'm Leanne Dofano. We'll hear the first two cases, then we'll recess for a panel change. We've got a couple of panel changes this morning, so we'll get started on the first case. Deborah?
May it please the court. This case involves a fraud claim against the Gladney Center. Mr. and Mrs. Friedman, back in 1979, went to the Gladney Center to adopt a child. Some of the two conditions that they presented to the Gladney Center was that they did not want a child that had a history or a birth mother or a birth father that had a history of emotional problems or psychological problems. That's critical because in this particular case, what happened was the Gladney Center provided Mark Friedman as an adoptee. Mr. and Mrs. Friedman, when they met with the Gladneys and they learned about Mark Friedman, they specifically asked the Gladney Center, "Do you have any information other than what you have provided to us about the birth mother?" And the Gladney Center represented to the Friedmans, "No, you have all of the information." Well, that was just not true, because what the Gladney Center had in their possession at the time that they made the representation was the medical records of the birth mother that showed a significant history of psychological and emotional problems. Some of the court's record shows a psychiatrist diagnosing the birth mother with depressive chronic neurosis, a psychologist also diagnosing the birth mother with a definite depressive pattern. Another diagnosis that the psychologist makes is that there was an adjustment reaction to adolescence. These were psychological and emotional diagnoses that both a psychiatrist and a psychologist that was hired by the Gladney Center diagnosed birth mother.
Do y'all have different positions on what it is you were expecting? Because on page 3 of their brief, they basically say that what you said is, "I don't want a biological mother who is schizophrenic.
Yes.
And you seem to, on page 3 of your brief, you seem to broaden the scope of that considerably. So is there a difference?
That's the question of fact, Your Honor. One of the questions of fact that this entire case is replete with is that the Gladney's position is that the Friedman said that all they wanted was a child that did not have evidence of schizophrenia. The Friedmans have testified in their deposition, which appears in the court record, that not only did they want that, they also represented to the Gladney Center they did not want a child that had a birth mother with evidence of psychological and emotional problems. And so that's the question of fact, or one of the questions of fact, replete with this, with the trial court's ruling denying or granting the motion for summary judgment. So
do you agree that at the time the adoption took place, the law prevented Gladney from disclosing the MMPI and the counseling results?
No. And here's why. We believe that at the time of the adoption in 1979, the Gladney Center, once they partially disclosed information, they had a duty on that part to disclose the entire information. You cannot tell a person that there are no, or you have all of the records, or you have all of the information on the birth mother, when in fact you have an MMPI result, a clinical psychologist, and a psychiatrist diagnosing the birth mother with psychological problems. Once the Gladney Center represented to the Friedmans that you have all the information, they partially disclosed a lie. And they did, in fact, once they made that leap, they had a duty at that point in time to fully disclose what they had in their possession. They had a duty at that point in time, even before the 1980 statute, to say, "Mr. and Mrs. Friedman, we have in our possession the MMPI results and a clinical psychologist and a clinical psychiatrist who have made a diagnosis. However, we cannot disclose those records to you at this point in time. We need to get an authorization from the birth mother. But what you can't do is you cannot tell the Freedmans that you have all the information when, in fact, that's not true. And that's why we believe the Hoggett case, Your Honor, in Texas, stands for the proposition that a duty does, in fact, arise to fully disclose information once you have partially disclosed information that conveys a false impression. Going further, one of the things that this entire record is has a question of fact is the mental anguish damages. That's one thing that has not been addressed by the appellees in this case, and that is simply this. Before we even get to the argument that the Gladney Center says that we need to have evidence that there is a genetic disposition of the birth mother's MMMPI results or schizophrenia or depression, that can be genetically transmitted to the birth child. Before we even get to that causation issue, there's plenty of evidence in the record that the Freedmen sustained mental anguish by the lie and fraud that was committed by the Gladney Center. The causation issue simply comes down to this. The Freedmans testified, and it's in the court record, that had they seen the records of the birth mother, had they seen the MMPI results, they would not have adopted the child. And because the record is also replete with evidence of all of the problems that the child had, the parents testified of the emotional problems and mental anguish that they sustained because of dealing with this child. Now, the evidence that we have that we presented to the trial court was that of Mr. Freedman on the causation issue. Mr. Freedman is a clinical psychologist. He testifies on behalf of the state to determine whether or not someone is mentally fit to stand trial. He also has a private practice. He is a clinical psychologist. The appellees brought clinical psychologists as part of their evidence that there is no causation. What Mr. Freedman testifies is he has the ability to interpret MMPI results. He has the ability not only to interpret MMPI results, but he testified that when there is evidence in the MMPI results of the birth mother having schizoid personality and depression, it is extremely likely and high that that will be genetically transmitted to the birth child. That's the evidence in the record. That is the question of fact. We've got a question of fact regarding what evidence can cause or can cause this genetic predisposition to have a child that has depression. And in this particular case, what ends up happening is the child does, in fact, have depression. He's diagnosed with depression in 1998. And so, Your Honor, there's clearly a question of fact with respect to mental anguish damages that were caused by the fraud committed by the Gladney Center, and also by the fact that there was tremendous amount of expenses associated with dealing with a child who had the psychological and depressive problems. I want to talk.
If you have the opinion that this is a genetic handed down situation, once it first evidenced itself, why didn't that start the clock running on limitations?
Because you have to know of not just whether or not there's an injury, you have to know of a wrongful conduct that caused the injury.
But you believed at that point that the mom possessed, let's say, genetic qualities that would have been handed down to the son. So why weren't you then put on inquiry that there may be information out there about the mom that you didn't get?
That's exactly what they did. In 1993, Mr. and Mrs. Freedman went to the Gladney Center, wrote them a letter, and said, look, we're having these problems with our child. Can you tell us if you have any other information about the birth mother? And again, the Gladney Center lied. They did not tell the Freedmans, oh, yes, by the way, we do, in fact, have an MMPI test result of the birth mother. We have psychiatric and psychological medical records from 1977 and 1979 of the birth mother. Instead, what the Gladney Center said was, you have everything. Again, they perpetuated the lie that they started back in 1979. And so at that point in time, the Freedmans had no reason to believe that there was any particular wrongful act or wrongful conduct conducted on the part of the Gladney Center that would give rise for them to believe that any condition that their child had is the result of some fraud that was committed on the part of Gladney. Remember, Your Honor, the issue is, in this particular case, the Freedmans specifically told the Gladney Center that they did not want a child that had a history of emotional and psychological problems, and the testimony from Mr. and Mrs. Freedman was, once they finally received the records, once they retained counsel and discovered the records in August of 2006, once they actually reviewed the records and the MMPI results, the clinical psychologist, Mr. Freedman, sees the MMPI results, and at that point in time, for the first time, they realize and discover the wrongful conduct. Because from Mr. Freedman's testimony, he testifies the MMPI test results clearly evidence a schizoid personality on the part of the birth mother, clearly evidence a depressive pattern on the part of the birth mother. The records show that this birth mother is walking into walls, that this birth mother, according to a clinical psychologist, Dr. Malone, has clearly a chronic pattern of depression. And so those records were not disclosed until August of 2006. That's when the fraud was discovered. That's when the Freedmans realized for the first time, when they looked to Gladney in 1979 and specifically asked, do we have all the information on the birth mother? And the Gladney Center turned to them and said, yes, you have everything. And that was just a lie. And so
I have another question. Going back to my original question, you admit that these records were by law not disclosable in 1979. It's your position that in light of the fact that the birth parents specifically asked for information and were told that they didn't, that there was none other available or none other in existence, no other information, that created a duty on Gladney to disclose, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so when we get to the letter request, the adoption has already happened, the letter request in 2003. So I'm not seeing how that really has any significance. It looks to me like the summary judgment pivots on the conduct in 1979.
I agree with you.
Okay.
I agree with you. I think the summary judgment evidence does pivot on the conduct of Gladney in 1979. The fact that in 1993 that the Gladney Center continued to perpetuate the fraud and continued to lie, I think is evidence of intent to conceal, intent to deceive. I believe that is some evidence. You know, one of the pieces of evidence that I need to prove or claims that I need to prove is intent to deceive. And I believe that can be proved through circumstantial evidence. And I believe that the fraud that was committed in 1979, the lying and not disclosing that there was, in fact, records, that Gladney Center continued that lie in 1993, and that is further evidence and circumstantial evidence of their intent to deceive back in 1979. And so I believe that is the more relevant aspect of the evidence that Gladney Center did not disclose in 1993 when they, in fact, had a statutory duty at that point in time to disclose any and all psychological and psychiatric records on the part of the birth mother. In 1985, the legislature did was they codified in the Family Code the statute that required the Gladney Center at that point in time to disclose any and all psychological records of the birth mother to the adoptive parents. And in 1993, when clearly faced with the opportunity to finally, at that point in time, disclose the psychiatric or psychological records, or even at that point in time to notify the Freedmans that we have this information, but we cannot disclose it. At that point in time, they didn't do it. They continued the lie, and that's clearly evidence of intent to deceive.
But if they had the information and they had disclosed to the Freedmans, we have some additional information, but by law we're not permitted to disclose it. Where's the causation then?
Here's the causation, Your Honor, with respect to the fraud claim. I cited, and again, I understand that this is a case of first impression in Texas, but I cited from six different jurisdictions across the country what and how you prove causation. How you prove causation in these wrongful adoption cases, negligent misrepresentation cases, fraud cases, it's clear from the case law. The way you prove it is, if I had known about the mental condition of the birth mother, I would not have adopted the child at the time of the adoption. And that's what the case law shows is evidence of causation. Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court. My name is Greg Love, and I represent the Gladney Center. And in this particular situation, appellants are trying to attempt to survive summary judgment on four different grounds. Now, what appellant is trying to do now is similar to that in the trial court in front of Judge Walker, is try to characterize something as a wrong that caused an injury without really telling you what is the wrong. There's lots of, words, the lies, the frauds, the concealments, and the things like that. I want to go ahead and start at the beginning, which I think will answer some of the questions that you've asked. In 1979, they adopted a child. Now, the process of adoption in 1979, of course, is very different than it is today, but it still involved the balancing of privacies of an adoptive parent, a birth parent, and a child. In 1979, this unwed pregnant teenager came to the Gladney Center from East Texas. Understandably, she was anxious and scared. Now, upon arriving at the Gladney Center, it's standard operating procedures. They administer an MMPI. They want to know, is there something that's going to jump off this MMPI and tell us that this woman is inappropriate for living with other women that are similarly situated? And then we go ahead and tell her, we're going to need to gather information from you regarding your health, your social background, your education, your medical condition, your family's medical condition, and your genetics. We're going to provide you counseling because we believe in ministering to you as well. We want to help you get through this tough stretch as an unwed pregnant teenager in 1979, and we hope we want to equip you with some tools when you walk out of here to be able to move on in your life and be successful. Now, at the same time, Gladney had a program for those who wished to adopt those children. Those people would come in and they went through an intensive orientation where they were walked through, and by the way, all of this is summary judgment evidence, not just argument. You come through the Gladney Center. You see that we do the MMPI, you see that we do the counseling, you see how we gather this information, and you see how we summarize that evidence into what is a three-page form such that when we finally get a child, we can match that child based upon the indicators that these adoptive parents say, this is what we want or don't want in a child. That's all documented in 1979. And you pointed out, Judge McCoy, that by looking at the appellee's brief, these sweeping things about emotional problems and that's not in the record. That is not summary judgment evidence. What the summary judgment evidence is they said, we are willing to accept a child that's experimented with drugs, preferably not after conception. We want no history of schizophrenia. We're even willing to accept an unknown birth father, which that's 50% of the potential genetic makeup of this child. Very permissive. Again, all that summary judgment evidence by the three Gladney people and the records in this case that were filled out when they came to adopt. What's interesting, because this argument changes depending on what questions are asked, even in the plaintiff's motion for summary judgment response, Paul Freedman knew that Gladney was performing psychological testing, counseling, and evaluation of the birth mothers. Page 5 of plaintiff's response to Gladney's motion. They cite page 114 of Paul Freedman's deposition. It's again attached to their appellant's brief. The fact that there was some deception going on is just not true. That information was distilled. It was communicated to the adoptive parents. That's given to you by three affidavits from Gladney employees. It's all summary judgment evidence. They matched those people. They felt like that was appropriate. So now I want to go to the question, because we have to evaluate, what is the wrong that caused the injury? What is the wrong? The lie, the fraud, the deceit, the concealment. Well, here are those counseling records. This is the magic document. If there's going to be anything like, this mother had Down syndrome, this mother had a horrible psychiatric history, this mother had was doing amphetamines and cocaine while she was pregnant, this is the record they're talking about, the secret counseling records. This is the MMPI. So when we've challenged plaintiff repeatedly, what is the wrong that causes your injury? Well, that's not important. It's just the fact that you had documents and you wouldn't give them to me. Well, that doesn't change our burden to have to address elements in the state of Texas that give rise to these causes of action. Whether it's fraud, you must have a wrong that you communicated, you meant to deceive. Whether it's negligence, you had a duty to disclose something and you failed in that duty. So, these are medical records. I look at these and I see nothing. I think you would be there with me. So we hired Roger Green, the expert in the country on MMPI review. He reviewed all of this. He says, there's no psychopathology in these records. There's nothing revealed by this MMPI that says that she had the problem, much less that it could be communicated about a child. Dr. Robert Gordon, another expert from Pennsylvania, he says the same thing. He just goes at it from a different way to reach the same conclusions. Dr. Finn, who's a clinical forensic psychiatrist here in Fort Worth, reviewed the same records. There's no psychopathology, nothing to indicate that anything that this birth mother was suffering from, much less could be contributed to a child. The affidavits of the Gladney people, who are social psychotherapists and certified social workers, all three of these opinions say the same thing. There's nothing in here, much less something that we knew about and concealed. So at its foundation, before we move anywhere, the wrong that causes the injury. Now, when we pressed the plaintiffs on that, and did the trial court, well, that's not important. It's the fact that you lied to me that you had records. But wait a minute. You knew that we were administering these tests and providing counseling and distilling this information into summaries and sharing it with you. You asked us again in 1993. Well, guess what? In 1993, we had no more of an understanding that there was any psychiatric difficulty than we did in 1979. So when you asked us, do you know anything more, we tell you, no. And actually, here's the 3-page document which now the law allows us to give you. But you see, the letter they asked in 1993, by the way, says, our kid has ADD. Do you have anything about the birth mother's ADD? Now, of course, once again, in these records, there's no mention of ADD. To address a couple of the questions Your Honor had, because now I think you were tracking along with Judge Walker, that wait a minute, as somebody with this experience, wouldn't you have been able to tell these things such that your clock would start ticking? And I think that that's the difficulty the trial court had when that wasn't that answered very well. But it's easier than that, frankly, because Mr. Friedman was never designated as an expert. Mr. Friedman offered no summary judgment evidence that he's qualified, and you'll notice he never called him Dr. Friedman. He's not a Dr. Friedman. He's a Mr. Friedman. There's no affidavit controverting any of our experts. So on the most important issue of what is the fundamental wrong, all of the summary judgment evidence is uncontroverted and says there's no such thing. Now, let's go to the other grounds for summary judgment, like the duty. There's no summary judgment evidence of anyone for the plaintiffs suggesting that there was a duty in 1979 or that it changed. There's argument in their pleadings, but that's not summary judgment evidence. Gladney offers 3 affidavits from the women who were working there at the time as to what the duty was, says clearly this is what it is, and we clearly worked within it. We disclosed everything that we were doing. They admitted in their motion for summary judgment response they knew it. And here are the records saying, all of the experts saying, there's no issue. So with respect to the duty, we came forward and said, our duty was to summarize this information and do this, and we met that duty. We're challenging you in a no evidence motion for summary judgment. What duty can you show that we have? Their response to that in citing cases in other states is, we don't have to come forward with summary judgment evidence if you defrauded us. Because fraud, there's always a duty not to defraud people. Well, you see, once you remove the fact that there was even a wrong, there's no fraud, there's no lie, then you realize there is no response to our motion for summary judgment on duty. So a no evidence motion for summary duty with judgment with no response, the court must grant that motion. Same with on the breach of duty. Their only response is, but you lied to us, you tricked us, you concealed us, you hid records from us. There's no summary judgment evidence that says there was a wrong. So there's really no response to the fact that there's no duty breached. Now I want to address the summary judgment issue on statute of limitations just briefly, because there's a lot of cases cited on the discovery rule and fraudulent concealment. This fits right into the analysis of the S. Fevers RV opinion, where you had an uncertain wrong. Now, of course, in that particular case, they filed the lawsuit 1 month after the statute ran. This one, I think, is like 23 years. But it's still an analysis of the court wanted to know, was there a wrong? And if it's after a statute is blown, the pronged tests are it has to be inherently undiscoverable and it has to be objectively verifiable. The court left the first prong alone and went right after the objective verifiability. And in that particular case, it was a girl claiming that she was sexually abused, the memories were repressed, but that she hired experts to be able to show there truly was a wrong. In this case, similarly, the challenge is, what is your wrong? You have to rely on a discovery rule or fraudulent concealment because 23 years is too long on any cause of action in the state of Texas. So what is your wrong? You lied to me. Okay, we're going to need to see so that we can balance in the state of Texas the effects and the purposes of a statute of limitation and to not keep you out of the courts with a meritorious claim. What is your wrong and can you objectively verify it? What is objective verifiability? Well, is there a confession? Is there a conviction? Is there a record? Is there semen-covered underwear in that particular case? Is there something objective? Because we had experts, but the court said, no, we're not going to accept experts fussing about whether or not there was a wrong. We need objective verifiability. Now into this case, there was a wrong. Do you see that it's in the same kind of pattern? It would demand experts having to fight about whether or not somebody messed up. But at least in the SV versus RV, the plaintiffs had experts. In this particular case, there is no fuss. All of the summary judgment evidence is there's no wrong. There's no schizophrenia. There's no psychopathology. This is just, there is no fight. And the court, I think the one case that is most on point that the SV versus RV court relies upon is the Robinson versus Weaver. They go into an analysis of objective verifiability in a Med-Mal case, for example, is, well, if you find a sponge inside of you, well, that's inherently undiscoverable, and you can objectively verify that with an X-ray. But then there was another case that came up where it says people were fussing over whether you misdiagnosed a disc bulging in a back. And the court said, no, we're not going to apply a discovery rule in that case because it's going to take experts to disagree over that, and we don't want that to be our test. Objectively verifiable. So the line of cases that I would direct this court to, if you're interested in that, is the Robinson versus Weaver and the SV versus RV case.
What is the evidence that appellant says points to schizophrenia in the mother?
I couldn't tell you.
Well, they said there was evidence that she walked into walls. Where did that come from?
There is a counseling note from someone that says that this mother, when she was walking around in the hallways, ran into a wall once. But that's not evidence of schizophrenia.
And you're saying that is, there's nothing else? Nothing else that would suggest schizophrenia? Nothing else that would suggest emotional problems?
I'm not a psychiatrist, which is why I hired them. And all of my psychiatric experts and my...
I'm not asking about your experts. I'm asking what appellant claims.
If I'm understanding appellant, Justice Duffino, is this page is what they're relying on to do that.
That's the MMPI?
That's the MMPI results. And all of my experts say, it just doesn't say that. And the only person that would dispute that would be Mr. Friedman, who, in my opinion, well, not even my opinion, it's not a matter about my opinion. He's not qualified as an expert. He's not submitted any expert affidavit, and he's not been designated as an expert. So the only person that seems to suggest that is the plaintiff, who's not summary judgment evidence to have that opinion.
Did anyone examine the son and report
schizophrenia?
The schizophrenia is an inherited trait.
No, ma'am.
Did anybody diagnose schizophrenia in the son?
No, ma'am. So with that being said, my law partner and my colleague have suggested to me that less is more, so I'm going to take my seat.
Justice D'Ofano, the representations that you heard about what was in the records is just false. At 147 of the court's record and 151 of the court's record, Dr. Malone, a psychiatrist, diagnosed the birth mother in 1977 with chronic depression. That was a psychiatric diagnosis.
But that's not schizophrenia.
I understand. At 183 of the court's record, there is clearly evidence that the birth mother, while she was at the Gladney Center, was walking in walls. In 188 of the court's record,
more than once,
walking into walls is the history that was provided in the records. There's no determination from the court's record if that was a single event or multiple events. At 188 of the court's record, Dr. Malone, after the birth mother is released from the Gladney Center, says that we strongly encourage that this child, this birth mother, continue to seek counseling and psychological help. That was the final diagnosis. At the court's record at 196, a PhD clinical psychologist, Dr. Foster, also diagnosed the child, the birth mother, with depressive neurosis, chronic rigid personality, adjustment disorder, several other psychological adjustment reaction of adolescence. That also appears on 220 of the court's record. Dr. Foster further says that the MMPI shows a definite depressive pattern. That's in the court's record at 196. To answer Judge McCoy's concern, at the court's record at 318 and 319, Mr. Friedman clearly testified that we did not want to adopt a child that had a birth mother with any evidence of any kind of psychological or emotional difficulties. That's at court's record 318, 319. At 231, Dr. Malone further diagnoses the birth mother in 1979. The birth mother came back to the Gladney Center in 1979 and so had a second stint at the Gladney Center and again had the same treatment by a psychiatrist, Dr. Foster, and then Dr. Malone, and then additional treatment again for the second time by a psychologist. And so all of those records also contain in 1979. Again, we still have evidence at 231 that the birth mother has depressive psychoneurosis. So the Gladney Center contention that these records show nothing.
They don't show schizophrenia. They show depression, and depression's often situational.
And also Mr. Friedman, who is a clinical psychologist, whose deposition is part of the court's record, who is clearly proved up to provide opinion testimony, clearly says that MMPI test results that show depression on the part of the birth mother is genetically transmitted to, or is highly likely to be transmitted to children. And one of the things that was clearly evident by the Friedmans when they presented to the Gladney Center is they do not want a child with emotional problems or psychological problems. And any evidence that the birth mother has of emotional or psychological problems, they wanted to know about it. And so there's...
I have another question. Yes. You can probably tell where my concerns are from the questions I've asked, but going back to the duty issue, now it's your position that Gladney had a duty to notify the Freedmans that there were records out there that by law they couldn't provide to the Freedmans, correct?
Yes, under a negligent misrepresentation cause of action.
Okay. So is there summary judgment evidence in the record that had the Freedmans been told that there were records that they did not have, even though they didn't know what was in those records, that they would not have adopted?
Yes, that is clearly in the record. The testimony of both Mr. and Mrs. Freedman in the court's record was, in fact,
I understand that there's summary judgment evidence that if they had known the results of the MMPI and if they had known the results of the counseling records, they would not have adopted. But is there summary judgment evidence that if they had just known that there were records, even though they didn't know the content of the records, the psychological records of the mother, that they would not have adopted?
Yes. Without those records, they would not have adopted. Had they known that the records existed and had the opportunity to see the records.
No, I'm saying not that they got to see them, because by law, we've established, you and I in our conversation today, that by law, Gladney did not have to disclose the contents of the record. Your position is that they had a duty to disclose the existence of the record, even though they could not tell the content in 1979.
With respect to a negligent misrepresentation.
Correct.
Claim, but not with respect to a fraud claim. With respect to a fraud claim, there's no duty that's required. You make a misrepresentation, the plaintiff relies on that misrepresentation, and there's an injury, and there's intent to deceive. There doesn't have to be a duty on the part of the Gladney Center to disclose records with respect to an analysis of simply the fraud cause of action. There does, in fact, have to be a duty to disclose with respect to the negligent misrepresentation claim.
Okay, I understand your position.
Ask one more question. You didn't address his assertion that you knew there were records.
That's
when
a question.
Through the orientation process, you knew that they had done MMPI testing. You knew there had been psychological evaluation. And so you knew there were records that you weren't getting.
That's a question of fact. That's what the appellees contend.
Well,
but we do not. The
summary judgment evidence that disputes that.
Yes. There's summary judgment evidence of both that the Freedmans were aware in the orientation process of this testing that was occurring, and then there's summary judgment evidence in the record that they had no information, no knowledge whatsoever that this psychological testing was created, and hence the fact issue. There's evidence of both sides of that particular fact issue.
Okay. Thank you. We appreciate both of you. Both sides coming in to argue. Your case is submitted and you are released.